hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker.
Welcome back to A Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, the A Doctor Who commentary podcast. There are others.
Other commentary podcasts are available.
Probably superior, although not with superior guests. Hello, Jason. No,
I'm pretty sure they have superior guests as well.
Oh, I believe you're on that one as well, coming up. I'm talking about the only other commentary podcast I know is Toby Haydokes.
Oh, well, yes, I may well be appearing on that at some point. But, I mean, you know, Toby's got so much stuff banked. Who knows when he's going to get round to the ones that I gave him.
He's got his fingers in so many pies that, well, I'll stop there, shall I? We'll both feature eventually.
We'll both feature eventually, yes.
Jason, we look forward to it. You and I are here together in the same room.
We are indeed.
For the, I think, rousing, you slightly less impressed conclusion to the Sea Devils.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a fantastic conclusion. I like it, but I don't think it... I think it's a bit of an anticlimax.
It's a lot of action, basically. It's Doctor Who sort of being a bit Hollywood.
Yeah, and it does have that one ludicrous bit right in the middle, which I'm sure we'll come to.
Yeah, you've alluded to this, you know, but well, let's wait till we get there and you can tell me all about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like this because I think this is probably peak Pertwee in terms of production value. There's a lot of great action in this episode.
Definitely. No, I absolutely agree with that.
I know we're not in Doctor Who for the action, generally speaking, maybe except for this era, actually. So certainly early Pertwee.
Well, this is the only era of the show that has a credit action by.
That's right. And there's a good reason for that.
Action by Havoc.
Ambassadors of Death, Mind of Evil, Inferno.
Ambassadors of Death episodes 1 and 2 are basically Havoc showreels because they have massive stunt sequences gorgeous. Involving helicopters and soldiers and all that.
Fabulous.
Which advance the plot not one bit.
No.
But they are gorgeous to watch.
I've said this anecdote a couple of times, but I'm going to say it again because it just makes me die. You've got Anjali Mahindra and Sacha Dhawan on the season 8 behind the sofas on the Blu-ray. And Anjali goes, and they're loving it. They're loving watching it. And she's going, you know, I always figured we had a budget increase when the show came back. You know, we did Sarah Jane Adventures and stuff like this. She goes, helicopters and all of this? She goes, they had the money back then. She's so impressed with the production value. And quite rightly.
Mm.
Yeah. And I can see why, if that's really important to you, if the production value is more important to you than the storytelling, in the mid-80s, when you were getting stuff like Time Flight and The Twin Dilemma and things like that, that you would look back at this sort of episode and go, oh, do you know what? Do you remember when they flaunted all that hardware in the Sea Devils? I get it. I do understand.
I mean, the to a certain extent, the problem seems to be universal in that although they had the budget to do these things, they seemed with remarkable regularity, and you'd think they would have learned the lesson, as it were, to very clearly have run out of money by the end of the year.
It was like,
Time Flight,
isn't it?
Yeah. Has nothing like the production values of Earthshock, which is right there next to it. And then you go to Time Flight, and you know the Armageddon Factor looks cheap and nasty compared to, you know, the Androids of Tara, which is a gorgeous production, and the Rebos Operation and things like that. And so they keep, and the Time Monster at the end of Series 9, we go from the Sea Devils with this fantastic production value that we've commented on, how gorgeous this production looks, how it all marries up, the stock footage, the location, the studio, everything, looking fantastic.
To BBC Shakespeare.
And then we get the Time Monster, which Atlantis is basically a stage set, and Kronos is a bloke flying around on a harness.
You do get to see Ingrid Pitt's tits in all their glory, though. Surely that cannot dent your enjoyment.
Well,
I love throwing this stuff at you.
I'm sure had I been watching Doctor Who as a young man in the 1970s, Ingrid Pitt in the Time Monster would have been a formative experience for me.
I think she was for a lot of people, you know. I think Katie Manning might have been too. But no, I get what you're saying. In fact, why Earthshock and Case of Androzani didn't end their respective seasons is baffling. But then there are many baffling decisions made during the 80s.
That's the thing. I mean, the Twin Dilemma is not... I don't think it's all that bad a story.
Oh, I love it. I think it's perfectly entertaining.
Production value-wise and costuming. What the... Anyway.
There's a glorious moment on the commentary, you know, where they go into the base on Titan 3 and Kevin McNally goes, well, you can tell Asmael's just turned up here. He goes, he hasn't even taken the shrink rack off the sofas. They're really ripping the production value, but having a great time with it.
But well, Maurice Denham does elevate the Twin Dilemma. If he wasn't in it, I think it would be a lot less enjoyable.
Yeah, he brings a lot of dignity to it.
The weird thing is, though, with the Twin Dilemma, that it looks so cheap. But the Jocondan costumes, the masks and the hair, actually really good.
The model shots are amazing as well.
The model shots are gorgeous.
Yeah. It's an odd beast, 80s Doctor Who.
But at in the same story, you've taken Edwin Richfield, who's doing fantastic work as Captain Hart in this story, and covered him in a ton of rubber.
That's right.
So you can't see his face, and he's muffled his voice.
Those weird sort of Star Trek Andorian antennae that... sort of limp over his head. Oh, it's so that mask. Well, you know what? We aren't watching the Twin Dilemma today. What we're going to do is watch something that everyone was lauding whilst the Twin Dilemma was being broadcast. The Sea Devils Episode 6.
The Sea Devils Episode 6, yeah. Which brought to a close the 1992 repeat season of Doctor Who, the first part of their season. At which point, there had been more episodes of Doctor Who shown on the BBC in 1992 than there had been since 1984.
Wow.
Although, just, if you want to argue the toss, 1985 had fewer episodes, but they were longer. But, of course, season 23 to 26 were 14 episodes.
Yeah.
In 1992, we had Time Meddler, 4 episodes, The Mind Robber, 9 episodes... because that's 5, so that's 9. And then 6 episodes of The Sea Devils bring up to 15. So we had 15 episodes of Doctor Who in 1992.
But not new episodes.
No.
And then it felt new to me.
And then we got 5 as a bonus in December, because we got the demons unexpectedly chucked in, because they were so impressed with the recolorisation.
I had to get in a load of long play tapes, you know, to try and record all this stuff.
I didn't record any of the first batch, which I wish I had, but I recorded Genesis of the Daleks. Then I missed episode 1 of The Caves of Androzani because I set my video recorder wrong. Remember the fun of doing that?
Did you watch it, though?
I watched it.
Oh, thank God.
But I set my video recorder wrong and ended up recording an episode of Coronation Street instead.
Oh, no. What was your reaction when you watched it back?
I believe I may have uttered some words that my parents would have been unimpressed with.
Dear.
But what I did make sure I did was record episode 4.
Oh, well done.
So I had episode 4 of The Caves of Androzani on tape.
I don't remember Mavis and Rita being in this episode of Doctor Who.
ITV. I can't set the bloody tape recorder up.
You know, I used to have terrible trouble with my tracking.
Mm.
There's some people listening to this. Actually, most of the demographic for this is 30 to 50.
I was going to say, probably most of the people listening should be familiar with it.
But... to be fair, there is a bit of a spike, actually, between 20 and 25. So, for you young people, tracking is when we had the old VHS tapes, but they get a little bit chewed, a little bit damaged, and you get these horrible fuzzy white lines going through the... Oh, man. It would always happen during the best bits.
Yeah.
It really irritated me. You have to press the tracking button, the plus and minus, to try and get rid of it.
The first VHS recorder that we had... Actually, I can't remember... Yeah, I think even the second one didn't have a bloody tracking control on the remote. You had to get up and actually go to the machine and twiddle a knob.
You don't know how lucky you've got it these days, young Doctor Who fans.
Digital media.
All of it on fucking BritBox in one place, like all the eggs in one basket.
Was there anything more guaranteed to make you scream like Omega in The Three Doctors than taking out the VHS and finding the tape had been chewed and was still...
It happens.
In the machine, and you like you pull it, and it just keeps coming, and the tape is...
Worse. No! You know, I taped on a cassette. This is how old I am. A cassette, you know, when you do have a pencil in the cassette to keep the thing in. I taped the Paradise of Death off the radio by pressing the play and the record button, and that got chewed up, and when I pulled it out, it was unsalvageable. Basically, if I kept pulling, that tape was going to... Yeah. And no amount of tape was going to sort it out. Oh, those were the days.
Yeah.
I miss them, you know.
I do too.
Because it was that those were the days where, you know, like, you didn't have anything at your fingertips. So when Doctor Who had turned up on Blue Peter, I literally came in my pants, so excited. I was like, my God, get the cassettes quick!
That was exciting, yeah. In these days of everything being there on streaming and on Blu-ray, because every episode of Doctor Who now has been
released. I think it's wonderful that it's there, don't get me wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Every episode has been released multiple times. Even the missing episodes have had multiple audio releases.
And we bloody bought them each time.
I know. I got the entire series on VHS. Ooh. Then I got the entire series on DVD. And now I'm getting the entire series on Blu-ray. What kind of idiot am I? How much more money? I could have a much bigger house.
Don't sit there and pretend to me when they bring these out as VR helmets. You are, and to immerse you in the actual story, yeah, you can be Ernie Clements
in
the forest, running away from the mummies.
When they've got the holodeck set up,
yeah, you'll be there.
Yeah,
you all will.
There, of course I will. But yeah, it's just.
Do you know what though? When you think about the value, you could have bought about 3 houses with that.
I know. But what is amazing, of course, is with every subsequent release, they take up less and less space on your shelf.
Yes, and actually, do you know these Blu-ray sets? I know some people obsess about them on Twitter, but with good reason. I mean, talk about having all your eggs in one basket. I mean, it is a cornucopia of special features, and the quality, it's just extraordinary.
They are brilliant. I mean, a lot of the special features have been ported over from the DVDs, and fair enough, they were good fun. There's a lot of new special features that have turned up. The restoration work on the episodes themselves is nothing short of spectacular.
This, the Sea Devils.
The Sea Devils.
We've mentioned it.
I was amazed by season 8.
Yeah. I said to you off mic, The Curse of Peladon shocked me.
Those gorgeous
film sequences as they're going up the cliff face are crystal clear.
And, you know, Doctor Who, all the way through, I mean, on the VHS era, that was certainly at the beginning, it was literally grab whatever version you've got to hand and whack it on a VHS, which is why you get hissy, crackly, fuzzy, shit black and white ones. And like The Seeds of Death, where the quality jumps with each episode, where they've edited them together. Towards the end, the restoration team started getting involved as the DVD releases came in, and the VHS releases kind of improved a bit. But then with the DVDs, I mean, the wealth of extra material you get on these things, and the extra material on the Blu-ray sets, so much love and stuff has gone into these. And it's great that you get to go to things like the BFI and talk to the people who worked on it.
As Toby Haydock said to me in the interview I did with him yesterday, the amount of extra unpaid work that goes into those sets just because they have such a love for the material, you know, is that you'd be really surprised. You know, like, I mean, it's a dream job for some people if you're a fan.
Yeah.
But you can sort of see how they go above and beyond. Because I'll tell you what, some of the other shows that I watch, the Star Trek sets are lamentable in comparison.
Oh, the special features there are just like, here's a little interview we did with the cast and crew. And here's another little interview we did on a slightly different subject with the same cast
and crew. I think there's
crew.
Probably roughly about an hour's worth of
here's a gag
special
reel.
Features. Oh, you don't even get that these days.
It's on Picard. There's a gag reel on Strange New Worlds.
Here's
a short gag reel. But yeah, I mean, I remember even when the restoration team first came up and started doing the DVDs, it was known. It wasn't, you know, they didn't brag about it because you don't. But it was a sort of open secret that they were working well below industry average pay to do what they were doing for these releases because they just loved the show and wanted it to look the best it could on the media when it got released. And these Blu-ray sets are fantastic.
Well, now we've given Chris Chapman a good stroke in and gotten him a few more sales. I don't think he needs to, though. They sell out, I think, these.
Yeah, now we've said all that, what are the chances of us getting a complimentary copy of the next Blu-ray set?
In fact, do you know what?
Whatever the next set.
Many lovely things said about you in that interview yesterday as well, you know. I'm doing more marketing for you than your own bloody team. Shall we watch episode 6 of The Sea Devils?
Why not?
Thrilling escapade.
Episode 6 on Blu-ray.
Countdown.
The season 9 box set.
You do the countdown call.
Counting down. In 45, in 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh no, we've been talking so long, the play button stopped working. Oh, there we go. Go now, folks, go now. I don't think any fucker watches these alongside the episodes, you know. I think they just listen to them.
I wouldn't have thought so. I certainly don't. Primarily because one of the main places that people listen to podcasts, of course, is when they're commuting.
Yeah. Ebb, yeah.
So, yeah, I listen to a lot of podcasts while I'm in my car.
Though, do you not think that it gives it a bit of re-listenability? Because if one day you did decide, oh, do you know what? I am going to watch them alongside the episodes. It's a whole different experience then.
I think in the next round of media releases, I think we'll just get people's podcasts on as commentary options for the things.
There we go. Oh, BBC, I'm here if you want me, okay?
Yeah.
I get the creme de la creme of the podcast talent on Hampton with Blunt Pen Knife.
Yeah, we'll quite happily be on these releases.
They did do a fan commentary on one story. What was it, Time Monster, one of the episodes?
Ah, right, okay. I think
Joe Lister's on there. There's one with Rob Shearman on the Monster of Peloton as well.
Mm. Oh, dear.
Oh, look, he's giving him a massage, look.
He's taken a kind of him. And then there he is. The doctor is unconscious at their feet.
Why would massaging his shoulders render him unconscious?
Who knows? Maybe the sea devils have a sting in their hand.
One of those sea devils, the head's been put on sort of too high, so yeah. He looks in a permanent state of shock.
Yeah.
Oh.
I do find the sea devils kind of, they lumber a bit strangely in some cases.
You try putting on that costume and see if you can walk in a straight line. I think they do very well. Actually, do you know what? I swear to God, that photograph they had in the window, you know, in Captain Hart's office, it looks like they've matched
it,
haven't they?
They have actually matched it to the scenery. They even had one shot where there was a moving radar dish on there between the window and the back cloth.
You just had sea devils outside that building there, and then we cut to a shot where there was three in the corridor. It just feels like the numbers... That there's a lot there. It's good. It's a good economic shorthand he's doing.
They're doing a good job of making it seem like there are an awful lot of these things.
Oh, there's a sequence. Oh, I know what bit you're talking about. Is it the bit where the doctor sabotages the machine?
Yeah.
It goes on forever, doesn't it?
It does. This is another bit where this happens a lot. The master needs the doctor's help.
Yeah.
Does he really think it's going to actually just help and not sabotage him at the first opportunity? I mean...
The strangest one is in Colony of Space when he offers him a share of the universe.
I love that scene.
You're paranoid.
Who isn't?
We're definitely going to do that one, you know.
I do like this with Walker going, are you sure we shouldn't be doing this, you know? Let's just be... Oh, dear.
I can sense the mucky fingers of Terrence Dix, you know. They're about to go up a ventilation shaft.
Yes.
I don't know why I said mucky. I'm so sorry. There's nothing mucky about Terrence Dix. Oh, there is no subtlety in this characterisation now at all, though, is there?
No, not at all.
I mean, it hasn't been throughout. But it was played... This sort of being played for comedy now, isn't it?
It is now, yeah.
There could be the most dreadful reprisals, you know. See, I like this, because Captain Hart has gone from being a very stubborn man. He's now absolutely the ally of the Doctor, isn't he?
Now he's in the situation, yeah. He's
my right hero. Now. My problem is this, you know, you did a little bit better than me in Technical Academy in Gallifrey, so you just fiddle with these wires, please.
Why does he need the Doctor's help to build a trigger mechanism?
It's constructing a sonar device analogous to a laser.
Yes.
See, that's just a load of words together there where I just go, oh, okay, yeah. See, you're the sort of person that knows when it's nonsense.
Yeah.
Have you ever made a laser, Jason?
I haven't made a laser, no. I have used lasers, but I haven't made one. Of course, we all know the main use for lasers is as a cat toy.
Well, quite.
And Nala loves it. She goes absolutely... As soon as she hears me take... I've got a laser pen in the pen pot in my living room. And as soon as she hears me go there, she's like... And she knows what's coming. And she will go absolutely...
Does she know it's a laser? Or does she think it's a creature?
Honestly, cannot tell. But she gets very confused.
Yeah, my old cat Sil used to go mental. She'd try and get to the ceiling if she could.
Yeah, she goes running.
Are you really going to ask that child to risk her life?
This is something that crops up in Doctor Who a lot. They keep referring to companions as children, and they're clearly not children. Yeah. Jo is a young woman. She is not a child. I think the worst example is Black Orchid.
Oh,
when they talk about Nyssa and Adric
lemonade
as children,
for the children.
Lemonade for the children. Yeah. So they're not bloody children.
Well, the thing is in the previous story, they let her have quite a mature, almost relationship with King Peladon. Yeah. So they certainly weren't writing her as a child there, unless something very dodgy is going on.
And that ventilation shaft is definitely big enough for Captain Hart to crawl through.
Oh. There we go. I just loved, like, go with me for a second. You see all this sort of creeping around she's doing in this very sort of industrial-looking place. I used to love finding places like this in Crawley where I lived, you know, industrial estates and things, and crawling around, pretending I was in a Doctor Who story.
Fair enough. The ventilation shaft.
Didn't you used to play Doctor Who? I did.
No, not really.
Oh, what did you do when you was a child then?
Played various other games, but Doctor Who wasn't one of them.
Oh, I used to love it.
But, yeah, no, it's the ventilation shaft escape is a classic, but yeah.
Why is all that equipment? Oh, it's a store. Sorry, I was going to say, why is it all in shrink wrap? But it's, yeah. Oh, I need a polarizing condenser. Oh, allow me, Doctor. Oh, thank you.
That's handy. He goes right the way, just long enough to let Jo and the Doctor have a chat.
Yeah, well, we have done this a few times now through the window, haven't we?
Yeah. I'm going to create a diversion.
See, sometimes, like earlier, there's the sort of silent sequence between him in the window. He has huge respect for her, you know, and trusts her. And other times he's like, you know, Jo, do you think you can do this without mucking it up? You know? I just wanted her just one time to say, oh, Doctor, fuck off.
You wouldn't have it now, would you?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know, though. Capaldi. I did like that bit, you know. You remember in Under the Lake where he had the cards?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for the loss of your
friend, relative, pet. I love the fact that they built this thing and it just plugs into a 3-pin socket.
I wonder what Mary Whitehouse thought of this one. I don't think she would have had too many objections.
Wouldn't have thought so. Here's a little test.
Oh, yeah.
There's a familiar sound effect.
What is it?
It starts off the same as the Cerebratron Mentor in The Invasion. It's that. And here we go.
You are a true fan, Jason Thompson.
I should have started a timer. Because here's the diversion. The Sea Devils are all thrashing around. Jo releases Captain Hart. Walker is useless and ends up locked back in the room.
Why is he doing that sort of Hitler salute?
Because all he has to do is run past. No, I'm just going to lock myself back in the room.
Sniveling Nazi.
Here they are again, still staggering around. Jo and Captain Hart run away.
They find a man. They grab his gun.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Jo can drive a hovercraft. That's handy.
Oh, come on, though. In terms of production, but look at that thing.
Oh, yeah.
That is one sexy craft. Shoot down some Sea Devils with a machine gun.
Yeah.
Or a rifle, actually.
Here
I think
they are.
It is. Yeah, it's a rifle.
Boarding the hovercraft.
You don't think someone would turn off that machine by this point?
You would have thought so, yeah.
Sea Devils doing incredible flips.
Yep.
Just so Stuart Fell can earn his fee.
Getting shot. Off goes the hovercraft. So they've got a hovercraft now as well.
Oh, come on. That is sexy AF.
Yeah, it sure is. Off they go in the hovercraft.
Do you know,
this sound is still going on.
Did you ever hear the story Katie Manning tells about being inside that hovercraft of all the sailors?
No.
And it buffeted, and she ended up, you know, basically in the laps of about 15 of them. And she said they did not object one bit.
I can imagine they did. And it turns out through all of that, the Master's just been standing there going, oh.
And the Doctor goes, I'm so sorry.
Sea Devil looks so sad.
He must have had the frequency too high. Well, he's just been in a lot of pain.
But yeah,
oh, for God's sakes.
Oh, yeah. I'll just switch those things around. There we go.
It's a bit like the holly gag in Red Dwarf. Do you remember? Is it the blue cable? No, it's the red one.
That joins up with the white cable. Bang! Or is it the yellow cable?
Hello, I love that bit.
Yeah, I think it should have been the yellow one.
Oh, again, that's a great photographic blow-up outside.
Mm.
Well done. Oh, I'm not saying well done to the set designer.
Well, you said teething troubles. Why would a sea devil understand the concept of teething?
They don't have teeth, no. You should say, what on earth are you talking about?
Yeah. That's handy.
Yes. The game is not over yet. He might yet prove useful.
He might prove useful because he built this machine. I haven't got the faintest bloody idea how it works.
My grandma, right, she had massive hair, yeah, like proper volume in her hair. That machine looks just like her old hairdryer. They did cannibalise. Oh, this is fabulous now. So they've gone off in the hovercraft to go and get a load of Navy personnel. And out they pour now with their weapons. And Captain Hogg gets to fire that enormous gun, doesn't he?
He gets into the... Here they come.
I think Michael Bryant says on the commentary that they weren't actually supposed to fire that thing.
Yeah.
But they just went for it.
Better to ask forgiveness and all that.
Look at this. We don't get this many unit soldiers normally.
No, these are actual naval personnel from the base, because this is an actual naval... this location was operational naval base at the time.
In terms of Doctor Who, this is big budget stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of people. It's a great location. There's hardware on the screen. There's loads of extras. None of this comes cheap.
No.
Oh, look at this.
There's a sea devil up the top. Do we think he might be about to do a stunt fall?
Yep. It's Stuart Fell. And he does a flip. That mask looks great there.
Yeah.
There's that one that looks shocked all the time.
One of them, it looks kind of casual, like he's just popping out to the shops. Fuck me, it's a massacre.
It is. And we've suddenly gone to the BBC stock sound effects of bullet ricochets and things, which makes it sound a bit weird.
But Brian is lingering on the corpses. Mm. He is trying to show that this is murder. I know it's supposed to be an entertaining sequence, but... Yeah, you're right. Look, in the studio, they're very green.
Yeah. Not quite sure when we got a close-up of the sea devil's groin there when he got shot, but, you know.
Oh, imagine getting shot in the groin. Oh, yeah, look at that. Look. It's the volume factor two. Oh, no. Why would you leave the master? Come on, Doctor, you know he's got a vast array of rubber masks, hypnotism skills, and he's a violent bugger too. Doesn't he smack him now?
He does. Again, this is like the hypnotism doesn't... It just gives him the opportunity to kill him. Oh,
wowzers.
Yep, here's Captain Hart in the big gun.
This, I mean, have you ever seen a bigger gun than that? Oh my God, it's right in my face. Jesus. Jerry, why have that gone off right in the camera?
There we go.
And because we've already murdered loads of sea devils, obviously this is just the same costumes they're using, but they're the same actors. It just feels like their numbers are vast.
Yeah, they do. You do feel like there's an awful lot of them.
Well, to be fair, I think Pennant Roberts, and I don't say many nice things about his direction in Warriors of the Deep, but he does make it feel as if there's a lot of Silurians and Sea Devils in that.
Yeah, he does.
They just sort of don't move very fast. And
no, that's the... I mean, it's not just about the speed of things moving, is it? Because there is something... If you do it right, there's something scary about an implacable foe slowly advancing. Yeah,
the mummies in Pyramid's Mars.
You can run away.
The Autons.
But they just keep coming. Whereas in Warriors of the Deep, it's just like, why are they just being so slow? Here we are on a bit of gadgetry.
Pertwee's he's in his element. Roger Delgado's terrified because he hated the water. Delgado's
wetting his pants, yes. Because he was not good with water.
And the rest of the Sea Devils are like, fuck this, I'm off. And they're back off, in the
back
water.
Back into the sea.
I can imagine they're very, very, very angry now.
Yeah.
I believe we get sequences just like this in Planet of the Spiders. Yes. With the Doctor and Lupton.
Yeah. Which, almost like this one, turns out to be a nice bit of padding to show off some... Oh, that's not Roger Delgado.
he's deliberately not trying to look in the camera.
But
yeah.
It's definitely not him.
And the trouble with that is, obviously, this is expensive. They can't do this again. So
yeah.
They're doing their best. Pertwee looks great, though.
He's having enormous
he's
fun.
Absolutely... he's soaking wet. And I love the camera hitting the sunlight hitting the camera as well.
Oh, it looks gorgeous. Isn't it?
It's fantastic. It's proper. It's seriously dynamic, I think, this episode. Oh, dear. More sea devils and their bizarre capsule. We're going under. Actually, how are they all going to get in there?
Well.
Oh, the sea devils don't need to. They'll just swim down.
Here we go, here's Walker. Oh, he's right, yeah. Nuclear weapons.
You know what's astonishing is in Legend of the Sea Devils, where they clearly had a bit of money, and they do underwater sequences with the TARDIS, why the hell didn't they have sequences of the CGI Sea Devils under the water?
Who knows?
And I was absolutely convinced that monster was going to be the Murker, you know.
I think many people were thinking that might be okay. It's a missed opportunity to do the Murker.
Series of disappointments, that one, I'm afraid. So now, that's it. All negotiations are over.
Yeah. But this is why I think this episode is a bit of an anticlimax, because you just had that massive battle sequence. And then we quietly go back to the Sea Devil's base and flip a switch and wait for things to blow up, basically.
Yeah.
I think at this point most of the tension has gone.
Jason, I think that might be peak Buffon from Pertwee there. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
And this one just sort of looks like he's got long hair. This Sea Devil, doesn't he? Bryant says he thought as they went along, they were getting the masks better and better. So they were making changes. And I think he's right, actually.
Yeah.
I like how calmly the Doctor says them in it. Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm going to blow up the base. And the Doctor, the Master's like, but we'll be killed. That's right, says the Doctor.
Oh, look, now the Sea Devils have got what they want. They turn on the Master. Who saw that coming?
It's never happened before.
No.
Do you think they'll really differentiate between us and you? Oh, alright. Yeah.
Well. Alright, okay.
Well, I think the Axons may have done as well. He looked like he was wearing lippy then, that Sea Devil. Did you see that? Oh, here we go. We've got ships. We've got submarines. I think this is one of the most expensive looking episodes of Doctor Who.
It does look superb.
It's great. But you are right. In terms of plotting, there is one conclusion this could possibly have now and no other, and that is the Silurians will all be killed.
Yeah, the Sea Devils will have to be.
That was a slip, sorry.
Oh, he reversed. That got a cheer at the BFI, didn't it? He reversed the polarity of the neutron flow. Hooray! Same again at the Five Doctors when he said it.
I like the fact the Doctor is just casually willing to sacrifice himself. Well, it's for the for the greater good. Enjoy your revenge. Let me out! Oh, dear. Do you know what? It's great when he's smart, suave and in control, but it's also very funny usually when he's foiled.
Yes.
The one time, the only time I don't think it works is when he's pleading for his life at the end of the Time Monster.
It's a little bit overdone, isn't it?
It feels very panto.
Yeah.
I've seen pantos that are less panto than that performance. But we'll both be killed.
Why didn't the Master think the Doctor was going to sabotage? He knows the Doctor can't possibly get on board with this whole revive the Sea Devils and everything else.
But also, I think the Doctor knows that if he boxes the Master into a corner, then that he'll help him escape, that they'll get away.
Yeah.
Oh, there just happens to be those flotation... Yeah,
they're useful. Yeah, I think there has to be an airlock somewhere.
Is it stock explosions again when the base goes up?
Yeah, it is.
That looks really good as well. Oh, Jane Blythe, look, she's bringing in some more food.
More food, more tea. Smoked salmon sandwiches. Salmon,
delicious. Twat. Yeah, Joe has gone from being remarkably competent to now sort of just snivelling and worrying about the Doctor a lot.
To be fair, though, at this point, there's not a lot she can do.
If this was a new series episode, she would be vital to the climax.
She'd have taken the hovercraft out.
Imagine Donna Noble. Come on, get this thing going. There he is over there in the water. Yeah. Oh, apparently Roger Delgado was so anxious to do this.
I can imagine he was. I would be. I don't do water.
Pertwee says that he was the bravest man he ever met because he basically confronted his fears for the show.
Yeah. Well, Tom Baker was very similar. He didn't like water at all, but he had to do things like the Deadly Assassin cliffhanger or the android invasion where he hides in a lake. Yeah. He hates water as well. He recounts
bronchitis from that, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He swallowed some river water.
never advised. Well, gosh, this all looks great.
It does. Well, you're right, given...
Usually I have to make a lot of excuses when I'm watching Classic Who for why things look really terrible.
No, I think in this one, that's not necessary, really. The only possible letdown, I suppose, is that their cell is just a... Black box. Oh dear, look.
Given everything else, though, that we've talked about, the location work, the sets.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Oh, so now the Master feigns a heart attack. He's always up to no good.
Always. Here we go.
It's a different moral position, though, isn't it? In the Silurians, he's livid and says, that's murder. Now he's the one murdering.
How
do you feel about that? I mean, this is basically what Troughton did every other week.
Yeah. I am quite happy with the solution, because the way it was presented, the Sea Devils have made it clear it's basically their more humanity, so blow them up. Yeah, they're back on the hovercraft again.
I think the big difference between
A lot of use out of this hovercraft, aren't they?
The Silurians, well, they should. It looks great. The Silurians and the Sea Devils is... I feel like during the Silurians, there's the suggestion that a peace can be brokered. In this, I don't think we ever feel like that's a possibility.
No, and, I mean, the argument in the Silurians, of course, is that he's tricked them into going back into hibernation. So they're not an immediate threat anymore.
Effectively, we are waiting 6 episodes just to see all the Sea Devils killed.
Yes.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we do like a massacre in Doctor Who.
We do, especially when it's all the aliens. Where was the Master keeping that rubber mask?
You don't want to know. The same place I kept those Maltesers.
the Master escapes to fight another day.
Farewell, my friend! Farewell forever!
Off he goes.
I must look at the final shot of Pertwee, though.
Yeah.
I'll get you, you fucker. I really enjoyed that last episode.
Yeah.
I completely see where you're coming from. It's a foregone conclusion with a double climax.
Yeah, we have the great big climactic battle on the beach, and then the Doctor gets captured anyway.
Yeah. And in fact, there are a number of Doctor Who stories that have that double climax, where the second one is worse than the first one.
Yeah.
Time Lash is a particularly terrible example of that. Time Lash
finishes with 15 minutes to go, so they have to write another step, ending to it. I mean, the main issue with that climax, I suppose, is that we're supposed to think that Walker is terrible because he's suggested a nuclear strike, but the end result of the Doctor's actions is essentially the same, except not with a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
It's like, well, nuclear bomb to blow them up because that's the most powerful explosive we have. The Doctor blew up their system from the inside. Same result. And, you know, Walker's going, I was right all along. And essentially the Doctor's going, actually, yeah, why not?
I think the only way they get away with it is because they tie it up with all that action.
Yeah.
Well, we have talked for, I think, about 3.5 hours now about the Sea Devils. So congratulations on that. But now we have to have our three recommends. And I haven't even thought about mine while we've been going through this. So I'm going to do this.
No, I haven't either.
I'm going to improvise this.
Or shall I start? Go for it.
Okay, then I'm going to talk about Michael E. Bryant. And I know going to the director is an obvious choice, but this is such a step up from Colony in Space, which I think, where you can see a fresh director excited at the possibilities, but perhaps lacking the knowledge to pull off things as smoothly as he could. Here, he's on a lot surer footing. He's got cooperation from the Navy, so he's got all this hardware. He's on the water, which he loves. I think he's developed a rapport with Pertwee and Manning and Delgado, so he's working with the actors brilliantly. It looks gorgeous. So Michael E. Bryant's direction is my number one.
Yeah. I think my number one is kind of is similar to that, but it's what we were saying, what you were saying right back in episode one. This is one of the most consistent and polished productions in Doctor Who, certainly in this era, probably in the whole series, where visually the studio footage, the sets, the location footage, the stock footage all work together. There's no tension in it where they've clearly put in a bit of stock footage to represent something that doesn't actually match, like a Saturn V rocket launch, which doesn't look anything like the model that we saw earlier or something like that.
Yeah.
This looks so consistent. I mean, the sets inside the fort, you could almost believe they were on location in the fort.
Yeah, dude.
The way they were put together. Just the attention to detail that's gone into the set design and the way they're shot in this story, I think visually it's one of the most consistent and well-polished of the Pertwee stories. And I don't think there's any parts in it, really, that look cheap.
No. This is one I would never have been ashamed to put on. No,
absolutely.
If a non-fan was around. And trust me, there was a lot of stories where I was ashamed to put on with a non-fan around. I think an obvious choice would be Roger Delgado. I'm going to go with a less obvious choice, and that's John Pertwee. Because I think Roger Delgado gets some of his best material in this. But actually, John Pertwee's really strong in this. The moral indignation, the fierce anger at points, that he can be utterly condescending. He can take the piss out of himself, the bit where the radio explodes. he's a man of action. You know, he takes to the water. He can do a sword fight. I said the word magnetic earlier, and he is. This is Pertwee at his absolute height. He's in his comfort zone. He's loving it. I'm loving him. That's my second one.
I think my second one would be all the supporting characters.
Mm.
Because they are so well done. Trenchard is a marvellous character. And I love the fact, as I said before, he's not under the Master's control. He's been manipulated to go along with the Master. He believes he's doing the right thing. He's not being forced to do something against his will. Captain Hart is a superb stand-in for the Brigadier. Like we said, if this was a unit story, it would have been over in two episodes because they'd have said, oh, there's some more of those reptiles, and the Brigadier would have gone, right, blow the buggers up.
It's like the Time Monster, isn't it? You know, there's a relaxedness to it. That's not here.
Yeah, so here we're back to the Doctor having to convince the authority figures that to go along with what he's saying. And he spends a long time doing this. Not until like episode four where Captain Hart finally goes, all right, Doctor, what do you want us to do? We'll do it. And then he gets, he's on side.
We get that line over and over again, don't we? I'm sorry, Doctor, I seem to keep repeating myself, but I do not believe it.
Yes.
Like Victor Meldrew.
Throughout the whole thing where you've got Trenchard and Captain Hart and Walker, the Doctor is constantly up against people, antagonists to what he wants to do and achieve. Not, you know, the Master is almost incidental to the whole thing. Yeah. Every step, people are against him, and not always for bad or malicious reasons. Captain Hart is just in a situation he's never been in. He doesn't know what else to do. He doesn't necessarily believe the story. And, you know, why would you? This guy you've never met walks into your base unannounced. He's only allowed to stay because he's from UNIT and they've officially, you know, recognised that he actually has clearance to be in this place. But he walks up and just talks about sea devils. Captain Hart doesn't see a sea devil until the end of episode five.
If someone walks into my shop and said there was a load of lizards attacking the mall, I'd go, oh, bless you, you know.
So I think all the supporting characters in this story are really well written and well presented, even down to some of the crew only have like two lines in the submarine or whatever. I think the supporting characters are all there and you can believe in them. They're not just ciphers to cover a requirement of a storytelling point.
For my last one then, I'm going to go for a often unsung part of the production, but we have talked about it throughout, and that is special sound. So the sound design on this, I think, is really great. The sea devil voices, the sound effects in the submarine when you're down there really feels like they're underwater. Simple things like the very cool alarm that we heard. I just think that the special sound and Doctor Who, they don't need to hear because they've got the money, they've got the action. But a lot of the time, they can create the atmosphere that the budget cannot afford to do. Here, it just marries with great visuals to create, you know, a very immersive story to watch. So, yeah, Dick Mills. Yeah. It's getting my vote.
Yeah, definitely. I think my last one, I mean, I could go on about the Sea Devils for ages. You know, I could cheat and say watch the Sea Devils because I really love watching it at the BFI with Katie Manning and everybody else, and it was a fantastic experience. But I'm going to say, well, the last thing I'm going to say about it is it's probably the most down-to-earth and grounded Doctor Who story, even in the Pertwee era.
There's no TARDIS or anything, is there?
The TARDIS isn't even... It's mentioned briefly at the beginning when the Doctor asks where the Master's TARDIS is. That's the only mention of the TARDIS anywhere. We're not in... we're not in the home counties. We're not in the middle of London. We're not dealing with the made-up military paramilitary force of UNIT. We actually have the Royal Navy, which is a real thing. And it makes this whole situation seem so much more grounded in reality. So I think it's probably the most contemporary, down-to-earth that Doctor Who has ever been. Because we don't have all these extra trappings of familiar faces and everything else. It's that this is the Royal Navy.
And yet, weirdly enough, I didn't think about any of those trappings while watching this.
No, it doesn't slap you in the face going, look, we're doing something different. Yeah. It's just like, here we are, and it gets on with it. As you say, it's a really polished and confident production. It just goes right into it.
Like you watch an 80s story, and you're guaranteed, on the whole, an interior TARDIS scene, mentions of regeneration and the Time Lords and all of this stuff, you know, well, you don't get none of that here, do you? It's doing its own thing.
Yeah, it is absolutely doing its own thing. There's no wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
I said right at the beginning, quintessential Pertwee. Maybe I should have just said essential
Pertwee. I think everyone should watch The Sea Devils. It's a brilliant story.
Well,
other opinions are available. They're wrong. They are wrong.
They are wrong. Yes, but they are available.
But thank you very much for having me here to watch this with you. It's been brilliant actually being in the same room.
Lovely watching it live.
To watch it live. I have to say, though, that it still remains only my second favourite viewing of the Sea Devils, because, you know, you can't top the BFR.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even... I mean, honestly, just the two of us compared to that entire cinema of people.
Cinema full of people laughing their heads off. John Pertwee saying reverse the polarity of neutron flow.
All the interviews in between as well, the inside, behind the scenes. But when they showed that trailer,
the trailer
of the two little girls finding the...
Yeah.
The Sea Devil eggs in the caves.
Yeah, that was a really nice... The trailers that they put on these Blu-ray sets are getting better and better.
They actually bill them as episodes now. Yeah. I mean, the Tegan one deserves to be. It was 10, 15 minutes long. It was
superb.
Yeah, it's very well done.
Absolutely superb.
Well, look, Jason, where are you and I heading next?
I think we may be going back in time in terms of production, forward in time in terms of setting. We might be going to the planet Uxarius.
Ah, the planet Uxarius. I'll tell you what, let's go and record it in that clay pit. Is it still there?
No, I think it's all grown over now.
Shame. Fucking ugly planet, isn't it?
Yeah, which is kind of the point.
That poor fellow who has to get in that clay in episode 6, he gets very mucky.
It looks a lot of fun.
I do think there's some good action in that, though. There's a lot of gunplay going on.
There's a lot to talk about in that story.
And I think I might read the book again, you know, just beforehand, just so we can talk about that. So
yes, because we did that in the book club, didn't we? We did Doomsday Machines.
I'm absolutely riveted to watch Joe Grant's very first Doctor Who adventure.
Yes.